This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening.
All the leaves are brown.
Did you survive the earthquake over the weekend, America's $53.2 million movie quake? California. 2015's disaster had Dwayne Johnson, advanced special effects, and people with great hair and dirty faces running around screaming. ...1974's earthquake movie called, oddly, Earthquake, had Charlton Heston, really bad special effects, and people with afros and shag haircuts running around screaming.
Millions of people, living, loving, planning, fighting.
Do we need more movie disasters, replays of old franchises, Fast and Furious, Godzilla meets the Avengers with hobbits?
Big man in a suit of armor. Take that away, what are you?
I'm a hobbit from the Shire.
As American culture ground to a screeching halt as we contemplate yet another helping of Bush-Clinton loaf for our political main course coming up in 2016.
By the grace of God.
I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again.
I want to be absolutely clear with our people.
With all due respect.
I've been so blessed to be part of a family that has committed its life to public service.
Oh, it's such an honor. I think it's also a challenge.
This enough. You need to get out. And I mean now.
Okay, baby, that's a little too extreme there, but if you are on the ledge a little about recycled culture and the death of originality, stay tuned for a monumental debate on the subject, and we'll hear from you on when it's okay to recycle songs, takeaway tips for competent covers.
This is Ryan from Minneapolis, Minnesota. The best cover of a song ever would be the Cinnamon Girl cover by Typo Negative. It's a really good example of just the key tonality completely changing how a song sounds, the whole vibe of the song.
I need you to believe.
We lost all original thought in America, Jeff Yang and Gary Silverman.
The capacity for it or the execution of it. I think there's actually plenty of originality in Hollywood. I just think it's coming from places people aren't expecting anymore.
No more originality in America, Gary?
I think it's a question of tendency. And I think Americans will always be original. America is a home of originality. But the tendency of large business organizations is to gravitate to the predictable, which lead you to sequels and to derivatives and franchises.
So you have to dig?
Yeah, well, it's around. There's original things.
Somewhere.
Here we are, you know.
Hello, original stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, where are you?
It's under that rock over there.
I mean, we're here being original. Right?
Exactly, yeah. More from Gary and Jeff in just a minute. Meanwhile, whose license to do a sequel or a cover would you revoke or suspend? Wilmington, Delaware. I love The Cure and I love Jimi Hendrix, but The Cure's cover of Purple Haze is terrible.
This is Kevin from Dallas, Texas. It's Lauryn Hill and the Fugees cover of Killing Me Softly that makes me run kicking and screaming from the room. One of the most awful cover songs I've ever heard.
Okay, that's it for The Cure and The Fugees, whose remake license just gets a warning.
Bill from Rehoboth, Massachusetts, and I am a huge fan of Guns N' Roses' cover of Live and Let Die. Originally by the Beatles. I mean, I like the original, and I know they used it for a Bond movie, but there's just something about the Guns N' Roses cover that's just so much better.
First of all, Live and Let Die was a McCartney tune, not Beatles, for one of the most dreadful incarnations of the License to Kill Bond movie franchises. Let's just say Guns N' Roses could not fail here. Retreads aren't dead, you say?
Hi, this is John from Philadelphia. I don't think you can have a conversation about best cover songs without mentioning Johnny Cash's cover of Hurt. Trent Reznor is quoted as saying, "Wow, I feel like I just lost my girlfriend because that song isn't mine anymore."
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real.
But one more license suspension before we go. Northampton, Massachusetts, worst. Dirty Dancing, Havana Nights. I played a drinking game with friends where every time they did something awful, we had to drink.
You mean dance with you? Feels like dancing with my mother's ironing board.
I blacked out. Not recommended. Give us your remake, retake, take at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Send us a tweet at The Takeaway.
The time of my life. No, I never felt this way before.
Can you go back, Jack? Do it again. We'll turn it.
And now to our Monday big idea. Has pop culture become binge culture? Are we simply hitting the same button in the rat cage to give us a repeat zap from disasters, superheroes, disasters, monsters, Mad Max, superheroes? Are we so disconnected from politics that we have no energy left to look beyond the old familiar faces as the 2016 campaign approaches? Here to debate whether we're up the creek of culture without a paddle of originality, oh, what a dreadful metaphor, is Gary Silverman, who writes for the Financial Times, and Jeff Yang, who writes the Dow Jones column for the Wall Street Journal. Jeff and Gary, welcome.
Thank you.
All right, we got a little tease from you. Gary, you're kind of a yes on this question of loss of originality, but Mr. Yang, you seem to be a decided no. There's plenty of originality out there. I'll let you begin, Jeff Yang.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we're seeing here in both politics and popular culture is a reaction from the mainstream to the margins kind of crowding in. We're starting to see more and more diverse voices, and by diverse, I mean diverse in many contexts, not just culturally or ethnically. And as a result, the middle is being pressured and as a result is kind of gravitating towards things it's familiar with. You see the election of Barack Obama, for instance, and the sort of almost violent shivers and shaking that occurs across the firmament of, you know, sort of straight white America. And I think you see a sort of similar thing here in Hollywood where the familiar becomes something that is almost a reaction to, I don't want to call it contempt, but to difference in all its forms.
Another earthquake movie? Gary,
I think
I don't see any originality.
No, and I didn't see it this weekend either. But I think what we're talking about mainly is an investment story and mobilizing money behind projects. And money now tends to be very large money, big money. And what big money loves is an annuity. It loves predictable income streams. I mean, one of the great heroes in American life is Warren Buffett because he's a great discerner of the income stream and he can see predictable cash flows. And what you see is it's much easier to say we'll do Fast and Furious 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 than to take a flyer on something. Similarly, it's easier to do another Bush or another Clinton, not so much necessary for the public, and I think it's a good point, because actually the public rebelled in 08 against the Clinton inauguration and went for Obama, who was a completely unpredictable, unexpected event in American history. But the donor community goes right back to doing Hillary and goes right back to Bush.
So it's the big money that's really driving this in politics.
I think it's the nature of big money. And actually, to some extent, big money isn't as thoughtful as it might seem because it's committee money. It's institutional money. People go into meetings and decide what's the right and safe thing to do. And what you get then, and actually you're seeing it in different ways in the culture, not everywhere, not absolutely and forever necessarily, But you see it where all of a sudden we are watching Fast and Furious 7, I guess 8 is coming. And, you know, there may be Fast and Furious movies for the rest of our lives.
That's good. So, Jeff Yang, you have some experience with this.
I'm a little compromised in that regard, yes. Standard disclosure, my son Hudson Yang is, in fact, the lead on Fresh Off the Boat, the 11-year-old lead of Fresh Off the Boat.
Is that a push against the center by a bit of diversity, or are you basically seeing a 1950s sitcom with all Asian faces?
I think there's something fundamentally different from just sort of looking at things like Fresh Off the Boat as taking Fonzie and just giving him a deep tan or something. There's definitely an upsurge in, I'd say, risk-taking, at least within the realm of casting and development. And we've seen that this last pilot season, which was, by many accounts, the most risky we've seen so far as alternative casting and development of stories that sit outside of that comfortable white suburban family or white urban professional space. At the same time, I do absolutely agree. Hollywood is kind of a swarming medium, right? And it is actuarial in its drive. It's looking for the best place to put its money for the least amount of risk and the greatest amount of return, like every business. What we're seeing, though, now is that there are, I think, new stories that are, in fact, reframing that economic dialogue. I mean, no one expected it, perhaps, except for those of us who've been watching for, you know, two decades of demographic change. But Empire was the single biggest show on TV. And I don't think you could actually look at Empire and say, wow, that is exactly what we saw, you know, 30 years ago, just with a different set of characters.
I would say it's amazing, actually, how little originality there is, considering what an original country it is. I mean, the country is, you know, in the Bob Dylan words, you know, busy being born and not dying. I'm not arguing that people aren't original and creative and dynamic, because you see it everywhere and always. And similarly, that the United States remains a changing place and that it's drawing so many people from around the world. And that experience is always new. You know, a new group of people comes here. And then immediately, and that's actually most of American comedy is new groups of people coming here and being amused by the weirdness of their lives, which we can probably all speak to.
Part of this is what was often talked about in the crisis of the news in the 90s and the early part of this century, in the sense that it was difficult to do nuanced stories, and that everything kind of devolved to celebrity and, you know, sort of sex and very, very mainstream kinds of stories in the news. And we're seeing that in popular culture, partly because people are more siloed. They watch their own stuff. There isn't necessarily a common ground, unless you're talking about the Kardashians, earthquakes, and, you know, the Clintons and Bushes. So the center, what everyone connects with, is getting narrower and narrower.
Well, that's a factor, and I think, and to some extent, you see that a lot in the music world now. People tend to grow up and listen to a certain niche genre of music, whereas American musical culture, you know, those of us who grew up watching the Ed Sullivan Show could see, you know, Ella Fitzgerald and the Beatles and Leonard Bernstein or whatever. You know, you'd see a lot of, hear a lot of things. A lot of that is becoming codified. And actually, to some extent, music is really quite, to me, the crowning moment was last year's Billboard Music Awards, when they brought out a hologram of Michael Jackson, because it was like, to me, that was the symbol of the music. You know, if they could, they would have Michael there. And they have some Michael replica, or Madonna replica,
yeah.
You know?
I mean, but in a way, what we're talking about right here is interesting, because the notion that Hollywood or big music or other kinds of kind of mainstream culture are becoming less original is actually a reaction to the diminishing relevance of the mainstream. We're saying, actually, that the world is getting more original, that there are other places people are consuming, perhaps more niche, more fragmented, but certainly more personally relevant kinds of content. So it's not so much that Hollywood is becoming less original and therefore popular culture is becoming less original, is that popular culture is becoming more diverse, again, in its breadth. I think that it's really interesting to see this process, but it's not some sort of death of the big idea. It's more like the proliferation of many smaller ideas.
Jeff Yang writes the Dow Jones column for the Wall Street Journal, and Gary Silverman is the U.S. National Editor at the Financial Times.